reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Gonna find the page. Bookmark on the right spot. Isn't it? What is the number again? Totally wrong. 38, okay, yeah, that's what I had. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shri Yuda Valvacha Vidanti Matya Prajina Vishayam Padmanapadam Tatapi Bunjati Krishna Tatkatam Svakarajava Shirdavalvacha Hiranti Martya Prayana Vishayan Paramaparam Tatapi Bunjati Krishna Tatkatam Svakarajavat Shirdavalvacha Vidanti Martya Prayana Vishayam Paramaparam Tatapi Bunjati Krishna Tatkatam Svakarajava Shri Uddhava Uvacha. Shri Uddhava said, Vidanti, they know. Martya, human beings. Prayana, generally. Vishayan, sense gratification. Padam, a situation. Aparam, of many miserable conditions. Tata api, even so. Bunjate, they enjoy. Krishna, O Krishna. That such sense gratification. Katam, how is it possible? Shva, dogs. Kara, asses. Aja, and goats. That just like. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Shri Uddhava said, My dear Krishna, generally human beings know that material life brings great future and happiness, and still they try to enjoy material life. My dear Lord, how can one in knowledge act just like a dog, an ass, or a goat? Purport, the standard methods of enjoyment in the material world are sex, money, and false prestige, of all which are obtained with great suffering and eventually loss. One engaged in material life suffers in the present and has only a very bleak future to look forward to in the continuing cycle of birth and death. Thus, how can human beings who have seen these things and know them very well continue to enjoy life like dogs, asses, and goats? Often a dog will approach a bitch for sex, but the lady dog may not be attracted and will show her teeth, snarl, and threaten the poor dog with serious injury. Still, he goes about his business trying to get a little sex pleasure. Similarly, many times a dog risks being beaten or shot while stealing some food in a place where he knows he should not go. The ass is very attracted to the she-ass, but the lady ass often kicks him in the legs. Similarly, the ass's master gives the ass a handful of grass, which the poor ass could get anywhere, and then burdens him with great loads. The goat is generally raised for slaughter, and even when the goat is brought into the slaughterhouse, he shamelessly goes after the lady goat to get sex pleasure. In this way, even at the risk of being shot, bitten, beaten, and slaughtered, animals persist in their foolish sense gratification. How can an educated human being commit himself to such a condemned way of life when the result is practically the same as that of the animals? If by cultivating the mode of goodness one's life is filled with happiness, enlightenment, and future rewards, why would anyone cultivate the mode of passionate ignorance? This is Uddhava's question. Translation again. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Krishna, generally human beings know that material life brings great future and happiness, and still they try to enjoy material life. My dear Lord, how can one acknowledge act just like a dog, an ass, or a goat?" Om Ajnana Tinandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Shakshamitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah Namo Shindai Krishna Smedadevi Goswami Nami Prasara Prakshna Shtabakshi Libarindha Paratadhyansa Svachitama. So, this verse talks about how only in the lower modes we're actually able to enjoy animalistic sense gratification. Like any person in the mode of goodness would be absolutely disgusted by what animals are doing. And it also explains that we would pay any price for it. Because in the mode of ignorance, by definition, means that we don't really understand what is good for us at all. So, and we're totally unaware. Like we can't understand the whole reality of things. For example, you know, the dog is stealing food or is after sex life, but he can't see that actually the result is going to be so miserable. So in this way, animals or humans with animalistic intelligence, they enjoy a degraded life, which actually is nothing but suffering. And it speaks about, it's an encouragement to cultivate the mode of goodness. And we know from Bhagavad Gita explains very vividly how anything, what we experience, what we feel, is determined by the modes we're affected by. So in this chapter, in the Hansa Avatar answers questions, the first 8 verses basically speak how to elevate one from the lower modes. It's not just, you know, for the sake of being in the mode of goodness, but to cultivate the material mode of goodness comes first, and from there, it's like a springboard, we can come to the transcendental mode of goodness, Shuddha Sattva. But if without being situated in goodness, we can't approach the pure state of goodness. And then later on in this chapter, it will be explained how to do that. So we're first cultivating the mode of goodness and then acting in the transcendental mode. One will elevate oneself, but that comes later on. So it's interesting because when we look at humans' sense gratification, if you speak of sense gratification in general, you know, humans think they're so sophisticated and they're so smart in how they pursue sense gratification. No? Like Srila Prabhupada was calling humans polished animals because, you know, We have women dress up and put makeup on, and you know the men like buy a big car, but it's basically the same thing. It's absolutely the same thing. It's about sex pleasure, which is one of the 4 principles of animal life. And I wanted to share a realization I had. I was in urban yoga, and when you look through the windows on the back on the 3rd level, there's like a lot of windows and you can basically just overlook a lot of houses because it's quite high. And this, I was there and I was looking out of the window and I heard this grr, grr, grr. And I looked out and I saw this pigeon just approaching, the lady pigeon. And you all puffed up and, you know, got ready and showed off and, you know. And then he kind of, you know, she was all first all shy, and, you know, backed off a bit. And then after a while, you know, he kind of had some success. And they actually started kissing. I couldn't believe it. They were actually kissing each other. And he was making this whole show around her, and she was doing her thing. I was just shocked how much humans act like these pigeons. Anyway, so finally, you know, he had to go at her. And then afterward, you know, afterward they kind of, you know, had the little thing afterward, and then he left. And it's just incredible if you really compare it. It's like exactly what humans do. They might not do it on the roofs of the, you know, houses. You know, they might do it at home, and, you know, they're not having feathers, but they're wearing clothes. But it's the exact same principle. So, and, you know, it's absolutely the same. At the same time, humans just make it more complicated. Because, you know, we can't even enjoy like animals. We can't do it. Because they don't have any, for them, it's they act according to nature's law. But because nature's law for us works differently, nature's law basically for humans is to, you know, cultivate spiritual knowledge and, you know, go back to the spiritual world. Therefore, like, if you even try to live like animals, it's just so complicated. We just can't manage it properly. Sandini Shakti, or Catherine, she was yesterday here, and we were talking, and I was just asking her if she has some ideas what to talk about. She's coming along quite well again. And she was saying, like, she's just doing, like, a whole lot of charity stuff. And she was saying that, like, you know, she's kind of helping with this place which is in Sudan, and it's like they have like this place where they basically keep a whole lot of babies. And where the babies come from is because, and that, you know, it's condemned to have sex before marriage. So, but everybody is doing it anyway. So then they get pregnant and they get rid of the children. They put them in the bin, they leave them on the street. And it's just like horrible things because they do sense gratification, indulge in animalistic life, but because it's just not functioning for human beings, they perform these great sins. And the animals don't perform that. For example, if you have the pigeon looks after their babies and they fly out of the nest later on. But humans are just, they just commit so many sinful activities by trying to enjoy the senses in an animalistic way. And it's very horrible because, you know, because of the association with the, because they're in the mode of ignorance, they're not even aware of what it actually means for the future, and they might not even care because of the lower modes. So it's very, very unfortunate. So it's Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that we become overly attached to long association, and even though like the body is basically in a boat of pain, if you like, you know, really seriously think about it, how much pleasure do we get out of a body? How much are we sick? You know, how many mornings you wake up and you don't feel well, you know? And I was looking in pastimes from King Puranjana, and he explained how, you know, how we become so attracted to our material body, even though it gives us so much unhappiness, and also, as Uddhava points out, it creates such a great future happiness. But even, like, Srila Prabhupada's also given the example how if you try to pull out a worm out of the stool, it crawls back. Or we know the example of Lord Indra. You know, Indra was cursed and became a pig. He didn't want to leave his pigs, piglets, and his wife. Or, you know, his girlfriend, however you call it amongst pigs. Even though he was, you know, he was the king of heaven, like he had such opulence and such sense enjoyment, he like is inconceivable. But because through the modes and through like association with Maya, we just feel happy in whatever circumstances we are. If the pigeons feel happy with their little sense gratification. And if you offer a pigeon like, you know, luxury and a nice place to live, no, they just fly out and sit in their stool, you know, somewhere on the roofs. So we might suffer so much in our material existence, but because of ignorance, we keep ourselves in lower modes. And we all know from the Bhagavad Gita how we transmigrate or how we acquire our gross body because of karma and desire. So what we cultivate, what kind of desires we cultivate in this life and what kind of karma we accumulate, that is going to be our next destination. You got to be really aware of it. Sorry, I'm getting a bit confused here with my paper. Shudram Shakshu Spashanam Cha Rasanam Gramam Iva Cha Adishtaya Manaschayam Vishayan Upasevate. The living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which are grouped about the mind. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. And another one, the one before, in the 15th chapter, 8 verses. Shariram yat avapnati yat shapyutkra matishvara vidvaitani samyati vayagandan ivashtayat. The living entity in the material world carries this different conception of life from one body to another, as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. So in the pastime from King Puranjana, we very clearly see that this was basically his issue. Now, King Puranjana, probably everybody knows the story, this is he was a descendant of Prithu Maharaj. And, you know, Prithu Maharaj's family is very, very pious and very, you know, it's very auspicious. But But Puranjana was degraded himself. And he got approached by Narada Muni because he himself is so much absorbed into sacrifices. And he commits so many sins because so many animals are slaughtered unnecessarily. So Narada Muni approaches him out of his great compassion and he starts instructing him. So he tells him the story of King Prachinabharisha. And explains how King Prachinabharisha enters the garden and sees a very beautiful woman, which basically represents the materialistic intelligence. And she invites him to enjoy in the city of nine gates. So if our intelligence is materialistically affected, then all our intelligence will do is try to find objects of enjoyment. So the intelligence becomes subservient to the senses and will look out to arrange our life just to, you know, to feed our desire for sense gratification. But one verse in 4:28:10 says, the city of King Puranjana was overcome by the Gandhava and Yavana soldiers, and although the king had no desire to leave the city, he was circumstantially forced to do so, for it was smashed by Kalakanya. So Kalakanya is the daughter of time or old age. And so in this connection it's explained how in an unhealthy condition of the being separated from the Lord, we try to enjoy the material world. And we are given the material body according to our karma and our desires, explained in the Bhagavad Gita. And we get a body from Lord Brahma up to a microbe or ant or whatever. And according to that body we have, as explained in Bhagavad Gita, we acquire specific type of senses to supply or to facilitate our sense gratification. So our karma and desire, they define what material destination we will get. And as I explained before, we will very much become attached to this body because whatever gives us pleasure in this world, we become attached to. Isn't it? Like whatever tiny little bit of happiness you get, even going to a certain place, eating certain food, being with a person, our mind has this like this impression of the mind, of this enjoyment we had in the past from it, and automatically we are drawn to it. So at the time of death, we have to leave it all. Anything we liked, anything we enjoyed, every beautiful experience we had, anything we like to continue in our life, we have to leave. And, you know, when we chant our rounds, it's so difficult to forget all these things. But, like, imagine when you really have to leave it. Like, you totally leave it behind. And have to be pretty realized to remember Krishna at that point. So, Maya actually enables us. Maya is Krishna's agent, and she actually enables us to feel happy in this body. Because without Maya, we wouldn't be able to tolerate it. It's explained then when the Bhagavatam, when it speaks about the prayers of the living entity in the womb, it is explained that if we would be fully conscious in the womb, we would die, because our mind would just not be able to tolerate it. So Maya facilitates us actually to tolerate suffering and to even enjoy it. So Uddhava is saying that in the human form we can understand the suffering. Well, you know, this book, I was talking yesterday to Sandini Shakti, and she was saying, no, they can't. So now we can see, because the mode of ignorance has increased so much, people are not really able to enjoy it. It says here generally, but, you know, this has been spoken 5,000 years ago. And now, because the lower modes have increased so much, a lot of people really don't have any idea about, you know, they don't understand about the future life. They might have some idea about karma, which is not very developed in most people. Yeah, but a person who would understand it, who would actually choose such a miserable life? So Maya enables us to do it. And we see from the scriptures as well that that the choice we're making with living in the material world is such a bad one. If we really approach our life with intelligence, and if you have a tiny little bit of faith, we'll see that the spiritual reality is just so much, so incredible in comparison to our material reality. I mean, what do we really have here? Like, how many moments of happiness, like real happiness, do we have every day? And even then, like, what is really happiness? There's a description in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the third canto, the 15th chapter, and 13th verse. It's very beautiful, because this is after the four Kumaras, or the four Kumaras are basically on their journey. On the journey to the kingdom of God. It's called Description of the Kingdom of God. And they're just approaching the spiritual world, and it's just before they meet Jai and Vijay. And it gives a description of what the spiritual world actually looks like. And it's very, very poetic. So I'm just going to read these couple of verses. The demigods pray to Brahma, please look upon us mercifully, for we have fallen into a miserable condition because of the darkness. All our work has been suspended. As fuel overloads a fire, so the embryo created by the semen of Kashyapa in the womb of Diti has caused complete darkness throughout the universe. Sri Maitreya said, thus Lord Brahma, who is understood by transcendental vibration, try to satisfy the demigods, being pleased with the words of prayer. Lord Brahma said, my four sons, Sanaka, Sanatan, Sananda, and Sanat Kumar, who were born from my mind, are your predecessors. Sometimes they travel throughout the material world, spiritual skies, without any definite desire. After thus traveling all over the universe, they also entered into the spiritual sky, for they were freed from all material contamination. In the spiritual sky, there are spiritual planets known as Vaikunthas, which are the residents of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His pure devotees, and who are worshipped by the residents of all material planets. In the Vaikuntha planets, all the residents are similar in form to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are all engaged in devotional service to the Lord without desire for sense gratification. In the Vaikuntha planets is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is in the original person, who can be understood through the Vedic literature. He is full of the uncontaminated mode of goodness, with no place for passion or ignorance. He contributes religious progress for the devotees. In those Vaikuntha planets, there are many forests which are very auspicious. In those forests, the trees are desire trees, and all seasons they are filled with flowers and fruits, because everything in the Vaikuntha planets is spiritual and personal. So we can make a little comparison. Like, for example, in the forest, we associate with the forest getting lost, having wolves, getting caught in the dark, you know, like dangerous animals. And the trees, like these days, you know, that's not even any more fruit trees around. You know, the definition there's a pious and an impious tree. So the pious tree fulfills its beauty. And it does its dharma. It gives fruits. But the impious tree doesn't do anything. No flowers, no fruits. So we have heaps of trees, and they're all useless, basically. In the Vaikuntha planets, the inhabitants fly in their airplanes accompanied by their wives and consorts, and eternally sing of the character and activities of the Lord, which are always devoid of all inauspicious qualities. While singing the glories of the Lord, they deride even the presence of the blossoming Madhavi flowers, which are fragrant and laden with honey. When the king of the bees hums in a high pitch, singing the glories of the Lord, there's a temporary lull in the noise of the pigeon, the cuckoo, the crane, chakravaka, the swan, the parrot, the partridge, and the peacock. Such transcendental birds stop their own singing simply to hear the glories of the Lord. I wish we would have some of these pigeons here in the courtyard. Although flowering plants like the mandara, kunda, kuravaka, upala, champaka, arna, punaga, nagakeshwar, bakula, lily, and parijata are full of transcendental fragrance, they are still conscious of the austerities performed by Tulsi. For Tulsi is given special preference by the Lord, who garlands himself with Tulsi leaves. The inhabitants of Vaikuntha travel in the airplanes made of lapis lazuli, emerald, and gold. Although crowded by their consorts, who have large ships and beautiful smiling faces, they cannot be stimulated to passion by their mirth and beautiful charms. The ladies in the Vaikuntha planets are as beautiful as the goddess of fortune herself. Such transcendentally beautiful ladies, the hands playing with lotuses and their leg bangles tinkling, are sometimes seen sweeping the marble walls, which are bedecked at intervals with golden borders, in order to receive the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes, you know, we are asked to clean something, like, don't want to do it. Clean the kitchen, clean the bathroom. And you can see in the Vaikuntha planets, there's no dust. Things don't get dirty because it's, you know, it doesn't deteriorate like the material world. But still, to get the favor of the Lord, the ladies sweep the walls and the floors. So how much should we be eager? Since everything is getting filthy all the time. The goddesses of fortune worship the Lord in their own gardens by offering tulsi leaves on the coral-paved banks of transcendental reservoirs of water. While offering worship to the Lord, they can see on the water the reflection of their beautiful faces, with raised noses, and it appears that they have become more beautiful because of the Lord kissing their faces. It is very much regrettable that unfortunate people do not discuss the descriptions of the Vaikuntha planets, but engage in topics which are unworthy to hear and which bewilder one's intelligence. Those who give up the topics of Vaikuntha and take the talk of the material world are thrown into the darkest region of ignorance. So we have to spread the glories of the Lord by distributing his books, by telling people about Krishna, by chanting his names. So you can see that for devotees, their future is very bright. No? There's this beautiful proverb Srila Prabhupada is talking about in his books, and it says that there's a great sage, and he's traveling over the land, and he meets a prince, and he says to the prince, "May you never die." And then he meets a brahmachari, And he says, may you die very soon. And then he meets a hunter, and he says, may you neither live nor die. And at the end he meets a devotee, and he says to the devotee, may you either live or die. So it's the brahmacharya is engaged in severe austerities. So once he dies, he will go back to the spiritual world where he will enjoy unlimitedly with the Lord. So he should die immediately. And the prince, he's getting the results of his good karma, but by enjoying his senses excessively, he creates bad karma. So he should never die, because after his death, he will suffer for what he's done in his life. And the hunter, for the hunter, life is hell and death is hell. There's no enjoyment. And for the devotee, because of his transcendental consciousness, if he's in the spiritual world or in the material world, it's the same for him. So for us, we can live now in Vaikuntha if we bring our consciousness there, if we chant attentively the Lord's names. So I was thinking, like my spiritual master's Vyasa Puja is on Thursday, and I was thinking about what to write for Vyasa Puja. I was thinking what is the like most out, because he can say so many things about your guru. You know, how he saved you, how he saved everybody else. And I was thinking the most outstanding quality is reaching out to like non-devotees and helping devotees we become real devotees, pure devotees. So, and also the quality of the spiritual master is that he's an acharya. That means he has realized these teachings, and that is what makes it potent. And like you feel the difference of, you know, like a person like that chanting and like a person who's like a newcomer full of material desires chanting. So if we want to help others, make them aware of, you know, how much they actually suffer even though they're unaware because of their lower modes, and if you want to invite them to start practicing Krishna consciousness, we have to have some qualifications, you know. Like sometimes you see also, like for example, Anirudha Prabhu was saying the other day that the person who made him a devotee was basically a junkie, and they didn't really do anything themselves, but they made them devotees. So sometimes we have that as well. But in general, it's more recommended, you know, to come yourself to a higher platform that you can, you know, teach others, and that your words have the potency to touch other people's hearts and to make them want to transform. So we have to qualify ourselves for being capable to talk to teach others. And this is how we please our guru. This is how our guru pleases his guru, and his guru pleases his guru, and this is ultimately, you know, how we align ourselves. So, you know, the Hare Krishna movement is a preaching movement, which includes deity worship. Like, you know, we had yesterday the Sunday feast, many, many people came, and they get attracted by the beauty of the deity, so they're nicely maintained, how everything is clean, and also includes cooking, because like, how do you really make devotees? It's often really through the food, isn't it? One time Srila Prabhupada was saying that, he was saying to his disciples, you know, I tricked you. You know, I got you all with the prasadam. And one devotee says, no, Prabhupada, I came because of the philosophy. And he said, no, you also. So I don't know how many of us would have come if you know, everybody would be here on a raw cost diet or something like that, you know. So and another amazing thing actually of preaching is, we've just experienced that on Saturday at Urban Yoga, is that if the community is strong, if devotees have beautiful relationships amongst each other, there's nothing more attractive. Because what do people like the most these days? Like, people lack so much relationships.
You know, our very nature is to be in relationships, you know. The ultimate goal basically is to have a relationship with Krishna. So how can we have a relationship with Krishna if we can't get along with each other? You know, like I would think, oh, this person did this and this person did that, and you know, since I'm absolutely innocent and almost a pure devotee, they should behave themselves towards me. So if we have to build this community, and we have to show people that the Krishna consciousness is a positive alternative, and there's actually genuine love amongst the devotees. If people find that, and they find a community, they find real friends, they find people they can trust, whom can you trust in this world? Like, really trust, you know, like, for example, they keep the word, they stick to you, whatever situation you're in, they will help you. You might, like, traditionally, you know, Indian families still would work like that. But honestly, in the West, forget it. You know, you think you have a friend, and the next day you hear that this friend just had the worst gossip about you, about a secret you've been telling them confidentially or something like that, you know? It's just ridiculous. What to speak about families. So, you know, people get stabbed in the back all the time. They don't experience any stability in any relationship, no care, no affection. And when they come, I remember coming to the devotees, and it was like, oh, such a relief. Now finally you meet people you can actually love, you know. Finally you get that there's love in the relationships. So we have to really make sure that people experience that in our community. That, you know, we come close together, that, you know, the relationships remain chaste and supportive and centered around the service to Krishna. You know, if you look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita, what did they do all day? Did they, you know, they discussed Vedanta as well, maybe a little bit on the side, but mainly they did feasting and chanting together. So they were on Harinam parties, like we, for example, the program there at Advaita Acharya's house, you know, we hear the description now. He cooked so many preparations, and all the devotees had a big feast and just totally indulged in it, and was just having association, you know? Just having association with each other and, you know, praising the Lord. So, you know, we have to set, like, do our service, but also we can't neglect devotee association, sort of sangha, because this is so essential for our well-being in devotional service. And we can work so hard, but if we are not emotionally fulfilled, then we might not last. Because unless we are totally transcendental and only need Krishna in our life and we actually understand it, we need relationships, we need other people. So that's everybody out there. So we had a really nice program at Urban Yoga on Saturday, and it was like one the thing which amazed me the most was that after the program, everybody stayed and helped cleaning up. And I think really this is the proof of, you know, that a community functions. You're not just there to eat and, like, kind of have a good time, but also you do the rest of it, you know. So you can see there's solid relationships. And it was very beautiful. We had a lot of devotees coming, and they all were having a wonderful time and all beautiful relationships with each other. And we had quite a few guests coming, and they could just, because the atmosphere was just so blissful and so beautiful, they just joined in. Even though they saw everybody's wearing a sari and having tea, like, but they didn't care because the atmosphere was so beautiful. Yeah, so it builds a strong community to focus around our service, to focus on our relationships, and to focus on preaching. Also, when preaching is in the center, our relationships don't become mundane. Otherwise, you know, if we're not absorbed in service and we don't work together for service, it's just the same as in the material world. This is the center of our activities, it's the service to the Lord. And this is the center of our relationships as well, we should never forget. Otherwise, you know, relationship amongst friends and relationships among, for example, in a married life, man and woman, just become mundane if there's no service to Krishna in the center. Just the same as everywhere else. Yeah, and finally, last but not least, through preaching we get the Guru's mercy and that by Krishna's mercy. That's pretty much all I wanted to say. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah. Well, it's like there's slightly different descriptions. Also, this is not a complete description, obviously. I wouldn't exactly know what is the difference between, like, for example, you can see those copper brickshas. You know, like there's all these like rivers are supplying all the opulence of, you know, the spiritual opulence of the flowers and everything. Well. But like, you know, the main difference between the Vaikuntha planets and Goloka Vrindavan are the relationships. You know, the devotees have with the Lord. So the Vaikuntha planets is all in reverence. When and Goloka Vrindavan, the different the five different rasas. Well, actually, the third, the five and seven, seven minor. So that's a main difference. They're also Suravi cows on the Vaikuntha planets, aren't they? Hmm. Well, there might be slight differences. I've never read like a direct comparison. That's a good question. Yeah, certainly. Like for example, also as I was saying, everything's all cognizant. It's a spiritual world. So what I heard, as I said, is the main difference is the relationships between these two abodes. Are there any other questions? Comments? Okay. So thank you very much. Rambra Shimabhagatam Ki Shri Prabhupada Ki.